We are here at the UPHCA Academy, and we're in the backflow lab area with Mr. Greg Hand. He is the founder of Backflow Training Services and is now part of the UPHCA Academy. But Greg, you're kind of considered the grandfather of backflow here in the state. This is one of the stands you're standing by that you just recreated from the older ones that you had. But tell us a little bit about how you got into the backflow.
Well, being a plumber, backflow is just part of our trade. And so I got into backflow because I was also instructing plumbing apprenticeship at Salt Lake Community College. And in the plumbing apprenticeship, they actually had a guy come to all the instructors and talk about backflow and the seriousness of the backflow. So I started getting into that, and we started teaching it. Actually, I started teaching down at Utah Valley Community College. They had a program down there, and so did Rural Water of Utah. And there was a gal that worked for Division of Drinking Water that says 80% of the backflow testers are in Salt Lake Valley. We need somebody here. And so we went to apprenticeship director and said, you know, we need an apprenticeship, put this in, include it in our plumbing classes. We only need 40 hours. Well, he didn't really take on to that. We've got to have 80. So Patty looked at me and says, why don't you do it? There it is. Okay. I said, I started doing it. And I made a stand. The first stand I made only had the four assemblies. I had one stand. And after that, I kept getting used backflow preventers because a lot of plumbers didn't know how to repair them. So I'd get the used ones, I'd put in new parts, and I made four stands on it. In the beginning, I had four stands. And I believe my very first class was at the Quail Creek Water Treatment Plant down in Hurricane. Actually, is that Hurricane? St. George. Anyway, down there. That was my very first one. That was in 1998. And that's where I started Backflow Training Services. It just grew from there. So,
okay, so you created 12 when the Academy acquired Backflow Training Services.
Yeah.
And we've just built 7 more,
right?
Because the St. George Lab needs 7 down there. So how long has it taken you to put one of these together? Because it's a pretty complicated device from my point of view.
Usually it takes about 8 to 10 hours, and most of the time is spent finding the parts. You know, as far as assembling everything, I could do it probably in 6 hours, but finding the parts takes a long time to get all the small parts.
So kind of give us an idea of the class. It starts on a Monday, and then take us from Monday through Friday.
Okay, so the class starts on Monday, and on Monday we go through the student manual that actually talks about all the concepts of backflow. Concept, how does it work? What's back siphonage, back pressure, what's backflow? Thermal expansion, direct, indirect connections, high hazard, low hazard, all that sort of stuff. You need to know that because they're gonna have a test on Friday. That's 100 question test, you have to get 70% right. That's the written test.
And that's the ABPA.
That's the ABPA.
National test.
National test, right. So that's what we do on Monday. On Tuesday, we're right out here in the lab. We're going, reading the instructions step by step, learning how to test all four assemblies on Tuesday without any faults. On Wednesday, they're in the lab putting in faults, and that's what all these little valves are for, is to put in a fault. Now here's a fault, a leaky shutoff valve, a leaky check valve. That's all these are made of, is check valves and shutoff valves. Really quite simple, but it's still complicated, as you can see. So that's what we do on Wednesday. On Thursday, I do a PowerPoint presentation on test anxiety, because I can show you all the nuts and bolts of how this works, but test anxiety is just as real as anything else. I have test anxiety. I have to get recertified also. So they practice on Thursday with themselves. I don't know, like I've always told them, I don't know what you don't know. So you can practice here on the stands. You can go into the classroom and study the written part, because we have all the instruction, all the written parts in there. I have 5 practice tests in our student manual. And they've gone over that and seen the correct answers. And then on Friday, we take the exam, the ABPA exam. So they'll come in first thing, and they'll start the written test questions, 100 questions. When they get done with that, they'll hand it in, they'll come out here, and we'll have proctors that have already set up two faults. There's four assemblies. Two assemblies will have a fault, and a fault is a leaky check valve or a shutoff valve. And the students will perform without instruction and test all four of them without instruction, and then this is 100% on this. So the written 70%, so.
But the practical side is 100%.
You have to get 100%, and the proctors are well-trained to make sure that.
And they're ABPA proctors.
They are ABPA proctors,
so they're not the. This center becomes an ABPA testing center.
Test center, right. And the proctors aren't there to make them fail. They're there to watch to make sure they do it right. That's all it's for. And then, once they pass that, they become certified for 3 years. And then in 3 years, their certification expires. They have to come back and take the test again. Now, we have a recertification class that starts on Wednesday, because it's been 3 years that we get people bring up to speed, and then they have to take the same tests on Friday also with the other students.
Okay. So a few years ago, the state of Utah changed the regulations so that landscapers and excavators could install backflow systems.
Yeah.
What are some things that they need to know when they arrive there that they, is there anything special that they need to kind of be looking for or being prepared for?
Yeah, probably the first thing anybody does when they're going to put in any kind of assembly or device is, what is the hazard? Is this a high hazard or a low hazard? And that's the first thing you got to look at.
What is a high hazard?
A high hazard is something that will kill you.
Okay.
And a low hazard, it would be like, I like to refer to it as like food safe. Okay. Now, here's the difference. We have propylene glycol, which is sugar water. Mm-hmm. That's low hazard. Ethylene glycol will kill you. That's antifreeze. It's also. So you have to look at that. You got also, the next thing you want to ask yourself, can this create back pressure? If it can create back pressure and it's high hazard, there's only one valve you can put in. That'd be the reduced pressure backflow preventer. If you have back pressure and it's low hazard, you could put in a double check, because that's good for back siphonage and back pressure. But every other assembly or device is good for high hazard back siphonage. So that's when they shut the main down, drain off the water. I can create back siphonage right here and now. I'll go shut the water off in the building, drain off the pressure, I've just created a siphon in the whole building.
Okay, so help me understand what the difference between a high hazard. Is that someone that's putting in a sprinkler system?
Sprinkling system?
What other high hazards are there that someone would need to
When you put in a sprinkling system, it's not it's high hazard, but you could put in a pressure vacuum breaker or an atmospheric vacuum breaker. The only time you need an RP is when you have back pressure. Like it's on a hill. So we're back pressuring that. That's when the code requires you put in a reduced pressure backflow preventer. Pressure vacuum breakers, atmospheric vacuum breakers, they all work for high hazard. Like I say, all the other assemblies and devices are for high hazard back siphonage. So when you have to take, let's say you have a double check that's a code violation, and you have to bring it up out of the ground, you don't necessarily have to put in a reduced pressure backflow preventer. If it's all flat and there's no back pressure from elevation, pressure vacuum breakers work just fine. Or atmospheric vacuum breaker, however you want to pipe.
So who distinguishes, who specs out what type of backflow to put into a piece of property that they're developing?
Basically, it'd be the water purveyor. Now, the water purveyor, I say purveyor because I'm not going to say it's the city.
Right.
Because, as an example, here in West Valley City is not over the water. It's Taylorsville Benyon. They are the water purveyor. That's why sometimes the city doesn't supply the water. But they're the ones that are actually the kingpin. They're the ones that decide whether or not. They're the ones that actually send out yearly the report that says you need to get this tested. They're the ones that will say, okay, we've got 30 days to get it tested. You get a backflow certified tester, which is what we do here. We certify the backflow testers. Then they get on the list. Homeowner will call them up. I need this tested. They'll come test it and put the report back to the water purveyor so they know that they're protecting the main.
Okay. What do you think are some of the, you've been around the block a few times. What do you think sets this type of training program we have here versus maybe some others that are out there? And I'm not trying to badmouth others. I'm just saying, what did you want to make sure happen that was different maybe from other people in the training side?
Well, let me tell you, I've been doing this almost 40 years. And over those 40 years, there's a 40 years of experience that I've had bad mistakes. And I've corrected those. And I've watched a lot of people do demonstrations. I watch a lot of people stand in front of people, and I watch how they do their PowerPoint presentation. I said, I don't like that. I like this, how I feel comfortable. And how I teach it, honestly, is how I feel when I'm being taught. You know, does this guy really know what he's talking about? Or, you know, and I went to a conference one time and I heard a lot of people give their presentation, but this one guy stood out. He says, this is my background. He went on for 5 or 10 minutes saying what his background was. Now I can relate to him. And that's what I try to do, is relate to the students that, you know, and speak in their terms and not too much over their head.
Now, once you pass, going back to that Friday, once you pass that ABPA test, both the written and the practical, that if you're in the state of Utah, requires a certificate
right,
that you need to apply for and receive mm-hmm. to be able to install or to inspect,
yeah.
I should say, backflows.
Right.
So because ABPA is accepted by the state of Utah, it's just a matter of applying online uh-huh. to do that. Is that
right.
correct?
That's right. So when you take this class, you'll actually get two certifications. One will be a ABPA certification, which is valid nationwide, and then the other is the Utah certification. And that's the Utah certification number is what you'll use on your test reports as a tester. That's in Utah. Now, let's say we go to Nevada. Don't put the Utah, it's going to be an ABPA certification, or Arizona, or Colorado, or Idaho, or Wyoming, it's going to be ABPA. Now, you can take the same sanctioned ABPA class in Colorado, and you got an ABPA number. Now, you want to come to Utah to test, you need to pay the money, go online to get the Utah certification number.
Have you seen over the years a real move towards backflow enforcement because of wanting to make sure that our water is clean?
Yeah. It's actually, it really happened in the last about 5 years. And honestly, we can attribute that to Gary Rager, who used to work for Utah, for the Division of Drinking Water. He made it a mandate that all water purveyors will have an administrative backflow administrator. And they have to take the backflow administrator class and learn all the concepts about it, learn how to send out the test reports and get them back. Mm-hmm. And in the past 5 years, they've had to comply. So now that they comply, they start asking people, hey, we need this tested, which hasn't been tested ever since it's been put in 30 years ago. So that's how it started, honestly. And my classes, your classes now, I used to do 4 classes a year. Now we do 1 a month, and sometimes 2 a month. Matter of fact, we'll be 2 in a month in August. So, and it's all, honestly, because of that. The water purveyors are clamping down, saying this should have been done. And this was the law for the last 50 years.
Okay, so over the years, you have taught people throughout the Western United States.
Yeah.
But you've had some unique clients come in the past.
Yeah.
Share with us.
Oh yeah,
where they've come from. And
we had a class. I've had about 10 different classes from people from Korea. That's South Korea, by the way, not North Korea. Okay, just
okay.
Heads up on that. But they've come here because Korea has, I think, 5 army bases, And when it's a U.S. base, they use U.S. Plumbing codes, or building codes and plumbing codes. And so we have these Koreans that are they're doing maintenance, and they have to apply to the code. And they've come here and taken the classes from me to get that certification, the ABPA certification, some sort of certification, so that they are there. And I remember the first time we had them, the lady says, you know, they came, everything was fine. I asked her, I said, why did you choose me over all the others in the United States you could go to? She said, well, you're the only one that answered my email. And so I answered the email, and I said, well, yeah, but, she said, wait a minute. There was another guy about a week later that answered, but he was from Las Vegas. And there's no way I'm sending my guys to Las Vegas to take a class. So they've been coming here all the time, you know, whenever they need to get recertified or certified, either one. And so, I've also been, oh, by the way, I've also been to Ellison Air Force Base in Alaska in 2004 to do the same thing up in Alaska. I've had guys come from as far away as New Jersey. Had a couple guys from England. Huh? Just happened to be looking for a class, and they came here. So, yeah, okay. Quite.
So you've done this for as many years, and the Academy acquired the program, but you have remained as one of the instructors. You've trained all the other instructors.
Yeah, I've trained the others. Yeah.
And they've passed your careful observation and how they teach and so forth.
Yeah.
You still enjoy teaching classes?
I always enjoy teaching. Yeah, I really do. I like to see the light come on.
Before we had the Academy, you would move your stands every month to different locations in the state.
Yeah, I never had a permanent place of my own until I came here, and I did that for about a year. But before that, I'd have to beg people, Woods Cross, where you live. I've taught a couple classes up there at their facility, and Washington Terrace, and Roy, and I used to do a lot at Miller Campus, Salt Lake Community College Miller Campus, in their automotive places, and they said, no, you don't want to do that anymore. So I begged people, I'll go bend to St. George, go down the St. George Water, and did down there, but then they kind of said they didn't want me there, so we finally find a place, thanks to you, down there, where we just got through teaching a class at St. George. And there's a need down there, not only in St. George, but we talk about that corner is Nevada, Arizona, and those places would come over, because it's an ABPA class, it's not specific to Utah, so they'd come and take the class down there, so they don't have to drive so far.
So give us kind of an explanation of what it's like to pack these things up, the time and the energy and the effort. There's a lot of effort that you'd stack these things in the back of your vehicle and take all the equipment and hoses and everything. So this was kind of a perfect scenario of having a home people come to you rather than you go to them.
Well, not only, you know, if I was going to teach your class, I'd first of all find a place that would allow me to. And you can't go too many times to the well. You know, I can't go to somebody's, I'm asking them so I could use their facility to teach the class.
Because you need a classroom space, you need a lab area.
Everything. And then I'd also, whoever in that facility, which is usually water purveyors or cities or something like that, a couple of the other guys would do, you know, would comp them the student fees. Most of this stuff was sitting in my garage. So when I teach a class, I got to take it out of my garage, put it in the Denali, and drive it up, set it all up with hoses and everything, make sure everything works. Then when I get done, tear it all down, put it back in the Denali, and take it back and put it in my garage. And when I did all that, I used to open up all these little valves to let it drain out so it wouldn't freeze and break, and all the other valves. Now that it's here, I don't have to do that. So that's the time it also takes. But, I mean, just getting the logistics of putting hoses together and go from one stand to the other, make sure that's all done, make sure the drain valves, because water will run out of there, and zip tie things together, then cut them all off and drag it all up again. So I got tired of doing it.
Well, Greg, thank you very much for spending the time with us and doing the demonstration as well as this podcast. Yeah. And you've been a tremendous fellow to be part of over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Oh, yeah,
time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
I just do it for the accolades.
The UPHC Pipeline Podcast. The UPHC Pipeline Podcast. We'll be right back.